If you have been here long enough, say you've been here maybe 10 years, 15, 20 years, there's a good chance you've heard this story before, but I do make, I think, a valid point with it, and that is back in 1992, it was December, so it was Christmas time, and for whatever reason got into my head, I decided to take Andrew, 5, and Catherine, 3, to Tri-County Mall so they could buy some gifts for Jeannie and I could buy some gifts for Jeannie, right? So it's the Christmas season. Things are busy. We go to a few stores. I let them pick some things out. I got a few things myself. And as we're walking through that busy mall, now you go to Tri-County now, it's just practically a graveyard there. But back then, buddy, things were hopping back in 1992 at Tri-County Mall. And as we're walking along, I have Catherine's hand, and Andrew didn't want me to hold his hand, but he was walking right next to me. And so we're walking along there. We're doing fine. I'm keeping an eye on Andrew. I'm looking at him, and we walk on a little bit farther, and then boom, it just seemed like just like that, I lost him. And I panic. I'm looking all over the place, trying to find him, and a period of time of about 30 seconds went by. But if that experience has ever happened to you, that 30 seconds seems like a lot longer time if you're a parent, right? And you're looking for those children, you feel like, what's happened? And I'm thankful I found him, but I know that I had just had driven into their minds, you know, from the first time they could start speaking. I think I taught them about stranger danger before I taught them about Jesus. I think. No, maybe not. I did not do that. But that was right there in the top five. And one thing I would constantly say to my children, listen, if you're ever somewhere and someone grabs you and snatches you and takes you away, what's the first thing you do? Yeah, Dad, we know. That's not my mommy. That's not my daddy. Yelled at the top of my lungs. It's not my mommy. It's not my home. So, But I'm thinking, what if I hadn't found him? What if he spent 5 minutes or 10 minutes walking around there in that mall not knowing what to do? I would have wanted him to go to somebody to let them know what was going on. And the Coalition for Missing and Exploited Children, just a couple of years ago, they said we need to rethink this concept of stranger danger and ingraining that so much into our kids that when maybe they get into a situation where they do need to talk to somebody they don't know, instead of I never talk to strangers, that they can be discerning enough even at that age to look for a security guard or someone who's working, if it's at the mall or a store, somebody who's working behind the counter, or someone who's wearing a badge, that sort of thing. And I just couldn't help but think of this concept, stranger danger, and we've been talking about this concept of stranger things that comes from the book of 1 Peter, because Peter has said to them that they are strangers and they are exiles, that we as children of God are strangers and exiles in this world. And in a very real and profound sense, I don't belong here. You don't belong here. This is not our final. As we sing in that old time hymn, we're just passing through. And heaven is our home. Our citizenship is in heaven. And because of that, because of the fact that we live for Jesus and hold him up and share our faith in him and live our faith in him, just like they faced back in that day, there were times when they would face opposition and difficulty and persecution. In fact, the book of 1 Peter, the main theme of 1 Peter is persecution. And you read the entire book, and you can do it in about 15 minutes, you see the word about suffering and persecution over and over again. And in the text we have this morning, there's another one that talks about this idea of suffering and not being afraid if you suffer. But also, right in that text is a statement that says, be ready, be prepared to give an answer or to give a defense if anyone asks you the reason for the hope that you have. And so that's the big idea this morning. That's what I want to focus on this morning, and that is the question, how can we live that out in our lives in a practical way? Now, I know what some of you are thinking right now. I just know. I can't read minds, but I know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking, oh no. Another sermon on evangelism. Didn't you talk about us being ambassadors for Christ about 2 months ago? Didn't you cover it enough, at least for 6 months, and now you're coming back to it again? And let's just be honest. Most of us are uncomfortable with this talk about evangelism. A lot of non-Christians are uncomfortable about it, and we're uncomfortable about it. So why don't we just be honest and say that a lot of us are uncomfortable with this whole idea? I think part of it is because of presuppositions and conceptions we have about it that may or may not be true. Or when I'm encouraging you to be, quote, more evangelistic, what I'm asking and what I'm not asking you to do, because we get these ideas in our mind about what it is or what it isn't. Now, this didn't happen, but I guess 3 or 4 weeks ago, it's a Saturday morning, and Jenny has gone to the grocery store and come back, and she comes in and she says, hey, there's a couple of ladies that are they're working the neighborhood. And some of us might have a good idea what religious group that they're associated with, but they are known for going up to people's homes and knocking on doors. And I'm still there in my pajama shorts and a dirty T-shirt, and you should see my house shoes. You don't want to see my house shoes. They are nasty. They don't fit right, but buddy, they are comfortable, so I love them. So if you come to my house, you're going to see me in those slippers. Sometime before you leave, probably. But listen, I was comfortable. I didn't want to talk to them. Listen, I knew they already had their sales pitch. I knew what they were going to talk about. I already knew what they believed about Jesus and his deity and about several other things. And I just felt like it would not do any good at that point. And besides, I was comfortable in my comfortable clothes, and I was not going to run upstairs and get dressed up to answer the door. And I believe I could have talked with them, but in my mind, at least this is what I'm thinking, I don't think they're not here to listen to me or hear what I say. And so most people are that way. How do you feel when somebody comes knocking on your door? How many of you... some of you answer the door. How many of you answer the door? You know who's coming. It's raise your hand high if you know who it is. All right. And all right, that's good. And all the credit to you for doing that. And I believe that some good can come from that, planting a seed. And I know those of you who just raise your hands very proudly are thinking, Grady, you know what? You're not nearly as spiritual as I am. Because there you are. You hadn't even gotten dressed yet, and somebody's coming to talk to you about God, and you're at the blinds doing this to see when they get by, right? Well, I believe, whether we go the door-knocking route or not, I believe that we can make a difference, and we can make an impact, and we can be a light in this world and share a message with this world, and we don't just have to hold up our hands and say, look, there's no point in any of this, but what's the best approach in terms of reaching people for Jesus? Before I look at just a few basic things, I'd say number one, there are challenges we face, and we need to be honest about these challenges in our day and time related to this whole subject of trying to reach people for Jesus. I'd say, first of all, one thing in terms of your life might very well be that at this stage in your life, you're just trying to manage and get by. And things are bad, they're chaotic. I met with a couple this week, and both of them have lost parents over a short period of time, and one of those deaths was very difficult and painful. And as I talked to this mother, this grandmother, and she's speaking, she says, that other things in her life, that it just seems like they're just unraveling right now. And as I'm sitting there listening to what she is sharing with me, I'm thinking, you know, dear, you and your husband, right now, just to hang on and get through another day is what you need to focus on. And so if you're in that situation or you're just trying to get things managed, then I'm not, you know, trying to guilt you to go out and be more evangelistic right now, okay? But I do believe even in those hard and difficult circumstances, we can have an effect and we can reach out. Another challenge we face is just the age that we live in. We live in a postmodern age, and with millennials and Gen Xers, and not all of them, but studies have shown that they, the buzzword that is used is tolerance, and what that means is not just, listen, you can have your view and I can have mine, and I think my view is more valid than yours based on what I believe about truth and my reality system. But for some people, it means you have to say that my idea or my belief is just as valid as yours. And you are being arrogant and presumptuous to say that you believe your belief or your way is the right way. And you're making a value judgment based on your view of reality or the Bible or whatever. That it's arrogant. And that's fine, believe what you want. But my belief, my values are just as valid as yours. And besides that, somebody might say, you're only believing what you're believing because you've been raised a certain way or you've had certain experiences. And you tell me that you're a Christian, but if you had been born in parts of India, you would probably be a Hindu right now, and you would probably be saying, that's why I believe what I believe. It's because of your background and your experiences of life and because of what your truth constructs. And basically, what those are, they're the suppositions that you have about life and about being, and the influences that go on in your life have much more to do about what you believe and why you believe it than anything else. So let's just face it. There is an attitude today that says that you can't really have a total objective truth or reality or this sense of an absolute truth. Now, I'm not saying, now this is where I think some of the points that are made, we need to admit and be honest that we are affected by our parentage and surrounding and our background and where we were born. We all have filters. And so I'm not standing before you this morning claiming that Grady is totally objective in everything, and I have no biases, prejudices, no preconceived thoughts, that I've let everything that has been in my life and affected me, it doesn't affect me. I look objectively at everything. I'm not saying that. And I know that a lot of us would say the same thing. And quite frankly, another challenge that we face today is just this. We don't feel equipped. And so it's like, well, one of the books I'm reading this week by a man named Sam Chan, haven't finished it, but read a good portion of it. He said, sometimes we will talk to people about being evangelistic, and it's like the situation with him when he was at a school and they had swim class and he couldn't swim, and basically the instructor would take them to the pool and say, swim. And he said, but I don't know how to swim. You're telling me to swim, but someone needs to show me or tell me or encourage me in some way how to do it. Kind of like my dad, and I've told you my dad's story before. He wanted to go swim with his buddies, and his mom and dad said to him, you can't go swimming. You don't know how to swim. But they didn't have an interest in teaching him how to swim or finding somebody who could teach him how to swim. He wanted to swim, but you just can't do it. There's a part of learning and growing and And I believe leadership can play a role. I believe I can play a more important, better role. I believe our elders would probably say the same thing in terms of equipping our church to see how we all, in our own unique and individual ways, can all be bridges to Jesus in some powerful ways. And once again, we don't all do it in the same way. But let me get to the core of the main text this morning, and that is chapter 3 and verse 15. The 1984 NIV reads here, "But in your heart set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared, always be ready to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give you the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect." And so, to me, there are three core ideas in this verse. The first one is, before we can begin to think about being effective in terms of how we reach others, I think the first point that we need to understand is, if it's not real to me, if it's not real in my life, if it doesn't make a difference, if I haven't been transformed, or as Peter says in chapter 2, like newborn babes, like little babies, crave the pure spiritual milk of the Word so that you can grow by it. And so we need to be serious about growing, developing our own relationship with God. And Peter says on that occasion, he says, if you have tasted, if you've tasted that the Lord is good. And so if we have tasted that the Lord is good and have experienced that, that's going to be the motivation and the help to be able to do the next thing that is mentioned, and that is be ready to give an answer to everyone who asks you the reason for the hope that you have. Now, if I were to ask you right now, one word in response to that, and I was going to ask you, give a reason. I'm going to put Dave on the spot, right here on the front row. I'm sorry, Dave. If I would ask you one word why you have hope, and you had to answer with one word, what would it be? Jesus. Right answer. That's the right answer. And you know, when your kids come home from Bible class, even if they hadn't paid attention, they have a good chance, when you ask them what they studied in Bible class, there's a really good chance you got the right answer. Oh, Jesus. We talked about God. So that pretty much covers it. Jesus. Now, this verse is not telling us that we have to have an answer to every possible conceivable question or objection that anybody and everybody might have about why to be a Christian or why should I be a Christian. That's important that we understand that. That is not what's being asked here. And then the third thing in this verse is that when you do it with gentleness and respect. So there's this behavior factor, there's this life factor that is tied in with this message factor. And we forget, or sometimes we forget, we will pull this verse out of context and we use it as an evangelistic passage, and we totally sometimes forget the context in which it grew out of. It's right in the middle of a discussion about people being hostile towards you. It's about people persecuting you and being in a tense situation that involves conflict. And Peter says, even in that context, in that relationship that is a hostile one, you can still, even in that one, you can make a difference and you can say something that may touch a heart. But most of us did not become Christians in that context, did we? Right? If I were to ask you in your conversion, let's just remove those who grew up in a Christian home. Let's ask the question to the rest of you. Did you become a Christian in this hostile, tense persecution environment? Yes or no? If you did, raise your hand. There may be some. But I'm talking about like this. Most of us, when we were led to Jesus and came to Jesus, most of us came to Jesus in the context of a relationship with others, with people that we knew and loved and trusted. And if we didn't love them, at least we trusted them. There have been countless studies that show that 85 to 90% of people who are led to Jesus, and this is outside of, you know, the typical being raised in the family type of setting, that 85 to 90% of those people say one of the major factors in them becoming a Christian was the influence of a family member, a friend, an acquaintance, somebody they knew. And so there's this relationship factor that's so important. And so the first part of this relationship factor that is important, if we're talking about steps or talking about priorities, one of them has to be this idea of being real or authentic. About being, as Peter says many, 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 many times in 1 Peter, how many different ways he talks about doing good, having good behavior, doing the right thing. If someone heaps abuse on you, then you do the right thing and you don't exact revenge against them. If they are speaking negatively about you, let them see your good behavior, and then maybe they will think differently about this whole thing. In fact, it's right here in this text, right after this quote evangelism verse that we're focusing in on. It says right after that, keeping a clear conscience so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Jesus Christ may be ashamed of their slander. In other words, they have negative views about you. They're saying bad things about your faith, but you share the reason for your hope, and you do that with a gentle and respectful attitude, and you keep on doing what is good and keep on doing what is right, and that will influence them, or that could influence them in a positive way. So let's not forget this idea that when it comes to evangelism, to me, from a biblical standpoint, evangelism is more a way of life than a method or some approach that you have. I am not interested in canned sales presentations. And you can spot them a mile away. It's a turnoff. And a lot of people, they maybe don't want to be preached to, however you define that. But I tell you one thing that will speak to them, and that is a life that is different, a life that is unique, a life that is like the life of Jesus. In fact, when Peter talks about the relationship between husbands and wives, one of the things he says in chapter 3 is that some of those unbelieving husbands can be won to Jesus without a word. In other words, it's not just the teaching and the preaching, it's the life. And that speaks as loud as anything. Number two, in terms of practical things, let's focus on relationships and growing those relationships deeper and deeper. How many of you have friends or acquaintances that are not Christians? Raise your hand and you know about it. All right? It will be all of us. But if we're honest, quite frankly, most of us, or many of us, spend most of our time hanging out with those who are already Christians or already share our beliefs, correct? And we may have some non-Christian friends, but maybe we don't spend a whole lot of time with them. And all I'm asking you at this point, and we'll have more to say about this in the future in different lessons, about a lot of what I'm talking about now. But just suffice to say, as we grow in relationships and get to know people, And as we get to know them, we trust them, and they trust us. There comes a built-in, I'm looking for just the right word, credibility factor that might open some hearts and might open some doors. And I'm talking about something as simple as that person at work that you've had some conversations with, and you just say to them, hey, during the lunch break, why don't we have lunch together? Why don't we have a cup of coffee together? And then when you meet with them, don't do it, hey, okay, I've got to talk to them about Jesus in this conversation. Okay, just get to know them. Just develop a relationship. And that might be the first of other steps that gets you to a place where God may open up the door where you can have some of those conversations that are a little bit deeper. And that brings me to my third point about this verse and how we apply it, and that is this. Next point up here. Look for open doors and take advantage of ways to take conversations to a deeper spiritual level. And I'm not talking about anything that's artificial, like you take some statement they make and use some awkward transition to something like, what? We're talking about heaven and hell now? How did talking about this apple pie, what does that have to do with that? Those kinds of deeper discussions, I believe a lot of times the more we get to know somebody, and as we trust them, they trust us, we get to go deeper. There's different levels of conversation. There's just the facts. I like the Cincinnati Bearcats. That's just a statement of fact. I like the Cincinnati Bearcats. You go a little deeper when you give the reason why you like the Cincinnati Bearcats. Well, I like the Cincinnati Bearcats because I went to school there and I met some really great people and I had a positive experience there and I got a great education. That's the next level of the conversation. You're not just talking about facts, but now you're talking about values and perspectives that say why you do or don't like something. And then that ultimate spiritual level is the place where you talk about spiritual realities and is there a God and could Jesus really be raised from the dead and what happens after you die. All of those things, that's where it gets deep. And I'm not saying that we get there immediately with people, but I will say if, say for example, somebody is struggling at work and they're a friend and you've talked, you say, you know, can I tell you what's really helped me? When I went through something like that last year, I tell you, if I didn't have the gift of prayer in my life, I don't know where I'd be. So they say something to open a door, or they're experiencing something. A lot of times they will give you hints that will give you permission to take things a little bit deeper. But I tell you, if you're like me, sometimes I miss those hints and I feel bad and I kick myself later on for not going deeper. When I should have. And then the last one is this, practice hospitality. Now I'm going to have a lot more to say about this over the next several months, about this whole idea of hospitality. And that can be practiced in all kinds of ways. You go from having somebody meet you at Starbucks to have a cup of coffee or meeting you here or there, and then you come to that point perhaps when you invite them into your home for some real fellowship in food. And I'll tell you right now, studies have shown that when somebody is willing to be in somebody else's home, that opens all kinds of doors in terms of people's receptivity for the gospel and then asking the questions that precipitate those kinds of things. Related to this, and this is kind of related more to the last point than this point, is this. We need to listen. We need to listen. We need to pay attention. Because sometimes, maybe, we may be more interested in thinking about what we say or how we say it instead of just pure plain listening to others. Because in doing that and sometimes asking the right questions, God will open lots of doors. Now back to hospitality real quick. I look back on my life and I think of the time that I spent in the home, and of course you've heard a lot of this story before, in the home of Dot and Bud Ballou and their family. And I will tell you this, she was a great cook. Way better than what I got at home. We got pot pies a lot at home, and they were really bad back then. And a lot of beans and rice, that's what we ate a lot. But I got that good food at the Ballou's. But looking back, I'm going to tell you right now, it wasn't about the food. It was on one level. But ultimately, it wasn't about the food. It was about what I experienced as we sat around that table, a kid raised in a dysfunctional home that has the opportunity to sit down and break bread and talk and just see what a Christian family acts like and what they do. And they pulled me right in. So do you think anybody had to drag me kicking and screaming when I finally made that decision to give my life to Jesus and be baptized? A lot of that work had already been done. And it wasn't all words. A lot of it was done by deeds, and it hit me right here. And we can do the same thing. Peter says that you are a chosen race, a peculiar people, a holy priesthood, a people belonging to God, who had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. And he's called you as people who've been called out of darkness, that you may proclaim the glories and the goodness of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, declaring his praises, opening doors. So take a step or two this morning related to a couple of the things I've talked about. Encourage you to dig into this subject. On the back page of the bulletin, there's a connect point about reading Geisler's book on conversational evangelism. A lot of good stuff in that book. But just keep praying. Keep praying and open your eyes, and God's going to give us more and more opportunities to be his light. Lord, we are thankful for the life we share in Jesus and praise you just so deeply. Everything we are ultimately is because of you. And it's because of your grace and your goodness, and not because our greatness or goodness. It's because of yours. And Lord, help us to be bearers of good news. In Jesus' name, amen. So, on the chance that you're here this morning and like you came to this worship service and you're kind of a skeptic and you don't believe in Jesus, and you say, man, I went to a service where the preacher talked about me and how to reach me the whole time. I want you to know that the only reason we want to be more effective in reaching people with Jesus is because we believe he's the light of the world and the way, the truth, and the life. And if you've been a little uncomfortable, maybe in here this morning, take my word. We're uncomfortable about it too. Because we don't want to hurt or offend or push anybody away. That's why sometimes we're uncomfortable about it. So, we're going to sing a song. If you need to respond to the gospel, if you need to be baptized, have any other need, let us know as we stand and